Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Tulsa Symphony Orchestra opens its season, its 10th season, tomorrow night with a programmatic evening of music titled Experience the Exotic, with Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov's musical tale of the wife who beguiled her sultan husband with stories, Scheherazade, the piano concerto number 2 of Franz Liszt, with crescendo music competition winner Yung Chin Zhou as soloist, and a mysterious contemporary work by American composer Augusta Reed Thomas, Her Prayer Bells. This also marks a debut of sorts for Daniel Heggie. While the conductor has led the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra numerous times over its previous 9 seasons, this will be his first concert as the principal guest conductor for the orchestra and the first of 3 concerts he'll lead the orchestra in this season. Daniel Heggie is music director of the Wichita Symphony Orchestra, a former music director at Syracuse Symphony, and an active guest conductor around the country. He leads the TSO this Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Daniel Heggie, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's great to be here, Rich.
Tulsa Symphony Orchestra opens its season, and this marks a debut of sorts for you. Of course, you've made many appearances with the orchestra, but your first concert as principal guest conductor for the TSO.
That's right. I'm very excited about it.
Now, how does that change what your relationship with the orchestra is, as opposed to being a guest conductor among others that come into the orchestra?
Well, this is a musician-run orchestra, and I really consider it as me being another musician along with everyone else, and everyone brings their own special talents to it. We have to have a great string section, great woodwind section, percussion section, brass section, and all of those individuals that make up the orchestra are all individual musicians, and they need someone there who's on the podium who's bringing some consistency and unity to the group, and that's me. So that's how I see it. It's not really changing. I mean, the same kinds of things go on, I think, when I've guest conducted in the past, but it's in the way that I work with them. I think with more frequency, for example, just having more of that presence, which is just going to hopefully enhance things even more. So I'm very excited about it.
Now, a lot of orchestras will have this principal guest conductor position along with a music director. Mm-hmm. And I, not having experienced that, I'm wondering if the principal guest conductor is like the buddy and then the music director is the father figure or the mother figure, you know, depending on.
Well, certainly in the very large orchestras, you know, like the Atlanta Symphony or something, they have that kind of structure where Robert Spano is the music director and Donald Runicle's the principal guest. And I think in that situation, you know, the music director probably has more of an administrative role. Mm-hmm. So instigating certain things, and then the principal guest basically comes in and conducts certain programs. Let's make music, right? Well, the music director hopefully is doing that too, but I think it's just much more tiered, all the kinds of obligations and responsibilities that a music director would have. In this particular case, as I said before, because it's musician-run, the musicians are very invested in the entire process from programming to choosing guest artists to having, you know, personnel, everything. I mean, they really are in on every aspect of the organization and running it smoothly. And so a principal guest conductor would be certainly someone who just comes in and then and gets the program together, because they need someone on the podium, you know, for rehearsal, of course.
Will you have a voice in though? I mean, maybe one voice of many,
but
a voice in some of those decisions?
Sure.
As a principal guest?
Well, as principal guest, but I think just as one other musician. And basically, I think when you're trying to find the best solution or resolution to any particular topic, the more people you can bring in with diverse experiences, the more light is shed on each topic. And so I'd like to just be that voice from a conductor's perspective where I could shed more light on it. But it's certainly not in any way to influence it unduly. I mean, in any way more powerfully than any other musician would have.
Right. And of course, that's the difference between a music director-led model where the music director is making most of those decisions, maybe in consultation or without consultation with their orchestra members.
It's always different with every orchestra, the way they choose to be structured. And I think because, like I said before, the musicians have such an investment, not only in the artistic side, but, you know, members of the board and they're working on the staff. And so they really get to see every aspect of what goes on, which is, I think, only a beneficial thing.
Yeah. This model seems to be working in Tulsa better than some other places. Some places this seems to thrive, and other places where a musician-run orchestra eventually goes back to the traditional model at some point.
Yeah, I think it really takes a willing attitude, and every person really has to have kind of an aerial view. I mean, they have to see it from 10,000 feet. I think in the cases where it hasn't worked so well, perhaps people are looking from their own perspective or how they feel about something, which is valuable too. But you have to certainly weigh that in the whole picture, seeing the big picture. And that's what these musicians have, and that's why I think it's so successful here.
Well, tell us a little bit about this program. It's titled Experience the Exotic, and yep. There is some exotic, Scheherazade, and one piece that is almost completely unknown, this Augusta Reed Thomas piece titled Prayer Bells. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with this piece?
Well, I am now. it's a really aptly named concert, Experience the Exotic, because number one, you know, it's starting our 10th anniversary season here with the TSO, and like you said, the Scheherazade is the obvious exotic piece. And we have Rimsky-Korsakov, of course, a Russian composer, but really drawing on the past and kind of the Orientalism and Middle Eastern and even Eastern European kinds of modes and things like that. So there's an exotic flair to that piece that's very overt. We start the program with Augusta Reed Thomas's Prayer Bells, which isn't exotic in that same way. It doesn't necessarily use those old modes of the past, but it definitely has a feeling of that it's very evocative and that is very prayerful at times and very introverted, but other times very epic and has huge moments. And the word bells in the title, you see happening all the way through the piece, not only in the percussion section where it's very obvious where there would be bells, but even in the way that all of the instruments are playing in certain ways where they attack a certain note that can be sometimes very soft and very subtle, almost like antique cymbals or something like that. And sometimes it's very, very powerful. It's a interesting and fascinating piece, and it experiments a lot with color and tone and orchestration. And it has all the same kinds of elements one would expect in any traditional music in that it's trying to relate to the human experience, you know, the sense of just pure drama. I mean, now it's quiet, now it's building to something big, and now there's a little bit of release of the tension, and then it starts to build up again, which is what we find in anything. I mean, you find in Beethoven as well.
Yeah, and I find that bell motif that's a part of the piece really interesting, because the excerpts I've heard, the strings, which you don't think of being a bell-like instrument, are both the harmonic relationships between the notes they're playing, mm-hmm. sort of evoke, and the way they're attacking the yeah. piece has this sort of bell-like sound, which I found really interesting, the way that she uses strings to sort of reinforce this motive.
Exactly, because when you hear the harmonies, the way they're put together, it's very similar to when you hear bells ringing, because
like
you can hear
carillon,
overtones.
Yeah, carillon. Yeah.
Right. You can hear the almost clusters of sound, even when you just hear any carillon bell. And so there's that aspect, but there's also the sound that keeps sustaining after the bell has been struck. And then that sound would then blend into a new sound. And so the way she's written it, the way these sounds come in and then blend over in another sound, is almost like what you would experience in a cathedral or something, where the delay continues on and sustaining sound, and then there's a new sound that kind of overtakes it. So that kind of overlapping of sounds is something that's also part of it. So it's really a beautiful sound picture.
Sounds like it's some masterful writing to get that effect.
It's very brilliantly orchestrated. Yeah. And like I said, it just has the dynamic and dramatic aspects to the piece that I think people will really be drawn into.
Now, before we hear it, you said you're now familiar with this. Was this a new piece for you? Are you familiar with Augusta Reed Thomas?
I am familiar with her.
She's sort of underneath the radar, but she's written a lot of pieces, and there are more and more orchestras starting to play her work.
Well, she is a very highly regarded composer. Yeah. I mean, she's one of the most important composers out there, and she's had residencies with major orchestras and at institutions, and she has played around the world. I actually got to work with Augusta Reed Thomas about 20 years ago or something. I did another work of hers called Wind Dance, and that was with the Louisville Orchestra, which has done a lot of contemporary music. And I got to work side by side. She was there when I was rehearsing it, and so I got to really know her and understand her style and how selective she is, even about things like, you know, the pitch class, like what kind of pitches we're going to use to create this kind of sound. She's really a very brilliant person. So that's how I knew her before. And then I've kind of been keeping track of her career, and she's done extremely well. So when this piece was brought to me as, hey, this is what we're going to play on our first concert, I was excited, Augusta Reed Thomas. But I didn't know this particular work until I started studying the score.
Now, what did you learn from having her by your side to, say, translate from that one particular piece to, say, any piece you do by her?
Mm-hmm. Well,
is there something you can learn?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, her music is extremely well constructed. Like, she really understands how to put things together in a very logical way, in a very intellectual way. But when you're talking to her, She really is much more interested in how the music's going to come off in that dramatic flair, how it's going to come off in a very personal way, in the way that it's going to be very epic or very subtle. And so she's much more about the gesture and how this is all going to affect an audience member. So, yes, all the intellectual aspects about it are in the piece, but that isn't what she's interested in discussing. She doesn't say, now this pitch has to connect over here. If it's done correctly, those things will come through. And for the listener, they don't have to be keeping track of any of those things about the construction of it. They just have to be kind of wowed. I mean, like any great piece of art, you don't have to understand every intricacy on an intellectual level to appreciate it. You can simply just listen to it, and hopefully those things can tie together almost on a subconscious level. And so what I learned from her is, you know, that you really have to go for it here. I mean, some of the more visceral connections with the music.
When you're talking about the gesture, you're talking about what you're doing and demonstrating to the orchestra?
Well, actually the gesture, the musical gesture that's within the music.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, you know, if there's something here, I don't, even though she put a lot of thought into exactly how it's going to be done, I don't think she was not as interested in talking about that in just a heady, detached way about composition. She was much more interested in how the musical effect was going to be produced and transferred to the listener.
Yeah. Well, let's hear a little music from Prayer Bells. This is the music of Augusta Reed Thomas, the opening piece for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra's concert Experience the Exotic this Saturday at 7:30 with my guest today, Daniel Heggie. That's music from Augusta Reed Thomas, Prayer Bells, which opens the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra's concert season in Chapman Music Hall with Experience the Exotic. My guest is Daniel Heggie, who will be conducting the concert, the new principal guest conductor. And this is his first concert in that role, although you've been a regular guest here over the years. And I assume you develop a rapport with an orchestra after numerous times of being in front of them, even as a guest conductor or principal guest conductor, as the case may be?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, absolutely. We get used to each other in a good way, I hope. You know, they get more used to my communication non-verbally from the podium, which in the end is really one of the most important, if not the most important aspect, really, with conducting, because the verbal aspect, of course, has to be translated in rehearsal. From the music, from the musical page, the players, and then we hopefully get that result. But the other connection, of course, is just how we communicate with each other, just in that kind of abstract way of me showing and them listening in a certain way, and to help enable them to just execute the music in the best possible way they can. That's what I really see myself as a conductor in general, is to help create the best possible environment for them to just simply do their job. Any conductor has to realize that he is not actually creating any sound up there. And all the musicians in front need whatever they need to actually just play the music that's on the page, which is already a big challenge. And so what I'm always trying to do is help enable them to do that and to put their best foot forward.
And I would think there would be a process as you're getting to know an orchestra, too. At the beginning of the relationship, you're perhaps being more demonstrative of exactly what you want to do non-verbally because they don't know you. But once they get to know you, then maybe a look, an eyebrow raised can suffice for something that you would do with your baton or very demonstratively.
Right, exactly right. And when I'm first getting to know any orchestra, I like to not speak very much at all at the very beginning and just simply listen to them. I think you just have to be a good listener. and conduct and show as much as you can. And then when the rehearsing actually begins, then you know a better approach for how to get things more unified.
Yeah. Well, the concert will continue with a Liszt piano concerto, the second piano concerto. You'll be featuring another Crescendo Award winner from the Tulsa Rotary Club, Yung-Chin Zhou, who will be the pianist. Have you met him yet? Now, mm-hmm. as we speak, we're speaking Thursday. You'll meet him tonight. What's the process for getting a sense of where the soloist's understanding of the piece?
Well, yeah, we'll get together right before the rehearsal, and we'll simply go through the piece. And what I usually like to do is have the soloist simply play. And we don't really even talk too much about it. I say, just go ahead and play. I want to see what your tempo is. And I make some notations in my score. And, of course, as is in many pieces, and certainly in this piece, the Liszt Second Piano Concerto, there are so many transitions for different kind of tempi and things like that. And there are times where an orchestra member may be playing a solo where he is going to be playing something very florid and not as easy just to follow in the traditional sense, but it's just something where he has to fit all the notes in. I mean, it's one of the way that Liszt was very revolutionary in pushing forward composition for piano. And that is that it wasn't just simply like, here it is, very, very straight and square, but it's extremely virtuosic. And sometimes there are way more notes that you just have to fit into basic structure of a melody that's being played by someone in the orchestra, and he's playing around it. So sometimes we have to discuss, okay, this is where I'm going to lead. This is where I'm going to follow you. This is where you need to do this. So those are the kind of conversations we have.
And then when you bring a soloist in the orchestra who's playing a melody, generally, you know, the conductor gives that soloist some leeway during that particular moment if mm-hmm. If they interpret it in a certain way. But now you have this extra element of fitting that in together.
That's right. It's a lot more to coordinate. So oftentimes when you're conducting with a soloist, you're a leader, but you're also a manager. You know, you're also trying to help the players because, you know, the soloist is way downstage from everybody. And you might have somebody in the back of the orchestra, you know, big horn solo or something, who can't really hear where the soloist is.
Or they're hearing it off the back wall,
exactly,
which is even worse.
Yeah, even worse. If they try to play with something that they're hearing, playing it late because they're hearing it so far after it's actually happened. And so that's where the conductor can just be helpful to be showing where that is. And so it's a matter of just, you know, a lot of coordination and, again, enabling the soloist to do everything he wants to do and getting the orchestra to really back up and support the soloist. And, of course, at times the orchestra isn't just supporting the soloist, but they're actually almost versus the soloist. They're pitting a musical argument against what's being played. And that's, of course, a very romantic ideal. Yeah. The concerto.
Now, what is it about this particular piece that you really enjoy conducting, the Liszt Piano Concerto?
Well, this piece has so much, so many contrasts in it, and yet it's very well unified in terms of the themes. And this is something that's kind of a hallmark of a lot of Liszt's music, and it's an idea that you might even say he borrowed from earlier on, from classical greats, and that is taking a certain theme and letting it metamorphose over these four movements that are actually all drawn together in one single movement, very much like his tone poems, where there are sections. You could almost say, well, this is like a first movement, this is like a second movement, and so on. But really, it's one unified movement that has these contrasting sections. Having said that, it does have the unifying thematic elements that connect all of the movements together, and yet there's incredible variety in the way all of those themes are played. Sometimes it's very poetic and very introverted. Other times it's very noble and very majestic. And sometimes it's very aggressive. And he even has things like violent, you know, in the music. You know, some places that has to be very aggressive. So you have all of these contrasting emotions that he's putting in there. You know, sometimes just juxtaposed one with the other. And I think that's partly what I like so much about it.
My guest today is Daniel Heggie, the principal guest conductor for the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra, which opens its season Saturday night with a concert titled Experience the Exotic, playing contemporary music by Augusta Reed Thomas, Franz Liszt, the Piano Concerto No. 2, and the Rimsky-Korsakov Scheherazade. This is a great classic. This is a bravura piece for the orchestra. Mm-hmm. Every section has its moments in this particular piece, but of course, the concertmaster has as much as anybody because it's almost a quasi-solo at times.
Well, it really is. There are huge solos for the concertmaster to play throughout the work, initially, right, almost at the very beginning. And we have to remember that the concertmaster really plays the role of Scheherazade in this, Scheherazade being the woman that the sultan marries. And of course, he has this terrible history of misogyny and killing each wife after one night. Has them. It's so hard to even say in a way, but he kills them after. This is a tale, by the way, everyone. This is not real. This is all fiction. But this story, then we get to Scheherazade, and to stave off her own execution, she starts telling these wonderful stories that are so adventurous and spellbinding. And so she kind of leaves the Sultan hanging at, you know, it's like, oh, well, I don't want to kill you yet.
The first cliffhanger ever.
Yeah, right. So wait, tell me another story. And then she does. And he's like, okay, we can't stop there. I don't want to kill you yet. And so this goes on and on and on. And then finally he realizes, I love this woman and I don't ever want to see her leave my side. And of course, he's not going to kill her at that point. So the voice of Scheherazade, musically speaking, is the concertmaster. And so we hear those little narratives, those beginnings of what's going to happen in the piece. And then, of course, the rest of the orchestra starts playing. And as you said, every orchestra member at some point really has to weigh in with something very virtuosic. And the woodwinds are shown off to great effect, and the French horn as well, the brass have big moments, but all the string sections as well too have something very virtuosic. So it's really a showpiece for the orchestra, and it's in four movements, so it almost has the feeling of a symphony, but it's more like a narrative. It doesn't have really these big, you'd say, development sections as you would normally find in a regular symphonic composition. But you have to remember, this is programmatic music. It's like what could accompany a great film. It's like the greatest film music ever written. It's so colorful. And anyone who knows anything about Rimsky-Korsakov, I mean, he literally wrote the book on orchestration. I mean, he's one of the great, great orchestrators of the past. And the way he's able to find a kind of Middle Eastern flavor, you really are transported into the exotic throughout the piece.
And you have to remember, at that time, what was called Orientalism was the rage in Europe. I mean, you have artists who would take sketching trips to the Middle East, and they would create these fanciful pictures of what like in the Arab courts were, and this sort of fascination with this Middle Eastern, what they called Orientalism, but it was Middle Eastern culture.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And like I said before, harmonically, he's taking these that are kind of these old modes and things like this, and he's putting them together. So you have this wonderful sense of that. But all the way through, you're getting these gorgeous melodies, just one after another, and very dramatic effects, orchestration-wise, and you know, things that sound almost improvised. And you have to always make it feel that way. You have to remember that the tools that a composer has, I mean, as time went on, if we kind of trace orchestral music back to the beginning, composers are always trying to find a way and invent a way to just speak very directly with the music. But they're kind of constricted in a sense because they have to notate it a certain way that can be read by somebody else. And so to pass this on and to really get the flavor of the piece, you have to almost read between the notes. What are they really trying to say here? What is the best way to do it? And of course, you can follow the text very religiously with it, and that works. But you also have to find that kind of je ne sais quoi in it. And that's where you can give license to some of the soloists to really find that voice. It's very individual. But there is so much in the piece to explore in that vein.
And I think, well, with Rimsky-Korsakov being such this wonderful orchestrator, there's so much of it that's right there
It is. It's
in-between is there.
Yeah, the in-between is there. It has to do sometimes with just a little bit how you're going to shape a phrase or something like that, or making certain voices more prominent than others. And of course, tempo has a lot to do with it, whether it's driving to this particular part or it's coming back away from this or those kinds of things.
I would think that particular piece is just always a fun thing to conduct.
It is.
Because of this part, it gets back to that masterful orchestration. There is just, the orchestra sounds so good playing that particular piece by Korsakov.
It does. Because it's just, it has all of these colors. You know, we talk about orchestral colors in the same way that people might talk about even visual colors. But you have these very splashy sounds. You have these very muted sounds. You have these big ferocious sounds. I mean, you know, the way he has the voice of the Sultan begins the whole entire piece. And so you have right away from the beginning, you have this incredible
explosion, really.
Yeah, this kind of almost devious force this, and then right after that, you have this very sublime sound of Scheherazade starting off the yarn, you know, the solo that tells the first story.
Well, I think that's an excellent excerpt to hear right now. Let's hear the opening of Scheherazade.
Great.
That's music of Scheherazade by Rimsky-Korsakov, one of the pieces to be performed by the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra this Saturday night at 7:30 with new principal guest conductor, but old friend of the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra, Daniel Heggie, who's the music director at Wichita, the Wichita Symphony, and he's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Well, how does this relationship go now as principal guest conductor? You're going to be coming back how many times this year?
Well, two more times after this, yeah, so three times this season. So that's a good amount. And then they still have room for some guest conductors to come in at the same time. So and they're evenly spaced out. So I'll be back again in January and then back again in the spring. So it's nice to kind of come back and just revisit all the things we like to work on in making the music together.
And of course, your appearance as the Schubert 9, was that last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was last year. Was it great? And I think you did Bruckner 4
yes.
several years ago.
And Mahler 3rd.
Yeah.
So I did some huge, there were some really gargantuan works. Ein Heldenleben before that.
That's
so,
right.
So, and they did, we did excerpts from The Ring on that same concert as Heldenleben. So, yeah, some of the programs have been really brilliant and meaty and heavy and exhilarating.
Is there a piece besides this weekend, obviously, that you're looking forward to this season with the orchestra?
Oh, well, the other large pieces, yes, Shostakovich 11 and also Copland's Third Symphony.
All right. Well, we wish you a great start to the season with Rimsky-Korsakov, Liszt, and Augusta Reed Thomas this Saturday night at the Performing Arts Center. Thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, great to be here, Rich.
Principal guest conductor Daniel Heggie speaking about the Tulsa Symphony Orchestra's season opener, Experience the Exotic, Saturday evening at 7:30 at the Tulsa Performing Arts Center's Chapman Music Hall, featuring works by Augusta Reed Thomas, her Prayer Bells, Franz Liszt Piano Concerto No. 2 with Crescendo Award winner Yong Chin Zhou, and Rimsky-Korsakov's Scheherazade. For ticket information, visit tulsasymphony.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. We're going to leave you with a little more music from Scheherazade here on Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.